Hey, so awesome. How about this? I was Huck let me know that you said yes. So I was so excited. Thank you.
It's an absolute privilege to be on Wātea. Always a privilege.
Oh, wonderful to have you. Wonderful to have you. First of all, big mihi to you for all of the work that you do, comrade. I see you out there and I've seen you out there for years, fighting the good fight.
Oh,
So I
that's very kind. Likewise, I'm a big fan of your activism as well.
Oh, well, I've been quite quiet lately, eh? I'm really looking forward to this talk. There's so much for us to catch up on. I'm going to go live on my Facebook soon. I'm going to tag you in because
Sure.
I've already hyped our audience up. I already hyped them
Oh,
up and I've said, hey, the bomber himself is going to be on.
please. Oh, please.
we're going to do it. We're going to do it. So first of all, how are you? How are you? How are you feeling at the moment?
I feel very sad for New Zealand. I think the election result has birthed something that we haven't seen in New Zealand politics for some time, and I think it's rough. I think it's very angry. I think it's three political parties that are bonded together only in their almost gleeful delight in punishing beneficiaries, gang members, and prisoners. And I fear that the policy direction that they have embarked upon so early in the creation of them as a government is actually quite frightening. And I feel for the 600,000 Kiwis who are reliant on food banks every month. I'm concerned for the 24,717 Kiwis who are waiting on the social housing wait list, the $1 million a day we're spending on kettling beneficiaries into unsafe motels, for all of those people who are just holding on by their fingernails right now. Life is about to become very, very difficult for them, and I fear that some of our communities, who are always the first to take the brunt when the economic tide turns, they are in for some very difficult times as a first-time homeowners, as our working classes, as our renters. A lot of good people, a lot of people who our hearts are with, and places we call home, they're about to get a hiding, and they don't deserve it. They don't deserve it.
Yeah, no, I've also felt sad, and I've felt in a couple of shops just in the last few days, I felt almost embarrassed. I haven't felt that feeling since I was a kid, and I knew there were times where I'd go into a shop with my Pākehā friend, and I knew that I got watched. I knew I was followed around, and I knew just because of my skin color that I was targeted and I was suspected of being a criminal. And for the first time again in a long time, I felt that in two shops again after, this new government has released all of their policies and they have targeted very clearly Māori. And I just, I work with Tōna Awatere Huata, an original member of Ngāia Tamatoa. And I was talking with her about it and I said, I felt this way, Whaia. And I said, what I'm fearful of. And she finished the sentence. She said that the racists have been given permission. And so, I think there's a lot of people out there that they've moved their headspace, their mindsets have moved, and they've seen actually that a lot of good has come from some unity and working on things together. Like the Oranga Tamariki Act, I've been very much involved with that and here in Te Arawa and Section 7AA, which, it makes it an obligation of people dealing in Oranga Tamariki with children when they're placing them to consider whakapapa first and to put titiriti rights, you know, and the mana tamaiti and concepts like that are very important, and they have had a good effect. And so, you know, I was very disappointed to see that level of, dare I say it, and this is a personal opinion, but we're talkback, right? So we're going to give some personal opinions, and if people want to have a say about it, then by all means.
That's right. That's the beauty of a liberal progressive democracy. We all have a voice, comrade.
Well, you know, I'm very disappointed that they have been naive, maybe ignorant enough not to see the benefit of it and to cut it out. And very disappointed in that decision. I don't think it's educated, because from what I've seen, the evidence is very clear. Māori children, when they're treated as Māori children and their families are put first, there are good benefits. So now that can be spread across so many different realms where this is going to bleed into this attitude. What's one of your biggest concerns?
Oh, look, I think you, let's continue with the incredible importance of 7AA, because I think that really sums up my fears the most, because you are absolutely right. There is no reason any reasonable person who is armed with the facts would look at 7AA and say this needs to go. My fear is that this is malice, that this is spite, that they are doing this because it is a Māori achievement, because it is a Māori-specific policy, and they just need to rip something up and burn it for their bloody voters, for the bigotry of their voters. Because if you look at Oranga Tamariki and its predecessors, all of this time we've had this terrible state organisation that has a legacy of taking brown Māori children away from their parents, ripping them from their, literally from them, and a long legacy of abusing those babies and abusing those kids in the state system. And we'd finally gotten to a point where we said, look, we can't have a situation where we're just uplifting Māori babies and just spitting them into the system. That is not a solution, and it's caused so much trauma, decades and decades and decades of trauma. Here is an opportunity to reach out to Māori providers and bring those babies into a Māori centric, a Māori worldview, a Māori way of caring. Let's go through that process rather than just ripping them away from children. Now, you can see from the state's perspective, their view is, oh, this whole having to go out and find a whānau member to maybe, you know, pass the baby to, or to research and find a better solution, that takes time and resources. It's far easier to just go in, take the baby out and move them on. And remember, the entire social investment model that they are using to justify this, the focus is on saving the state money, right? The reason why they're arguing you go straight in and take the baby immediately is because the argument is if you leave them with that family, they'll go straight into crime, they'll cause all of this problem. If we move in quick enough, remove them soon enough, then we're not going to have a cost downstream to the state. This isn't about the welfare of the child. This is about the welfare of the state's pocket. That is why it's so deplorable and so despicable. And to remove these safeguards that we have built in, like 7AA, that give the opportunity for community Māori groups to intervene and step in and be that bridge and be that well-sourced, resourced community outreach, to be that wraparound, right? To just wipe that out, I just think it's not about taking the treaty forward. It's not about honouring the treaty. It's trying to settle the treaty, and it's trying to ingrain a 19th century white settler privilege, uba alles, rather than actually working together with community groups within Māoridom to be able to make sure these Māori kids are looked after. And I just think that they're so willfully blind to that tells me it's not because they're stupid, it's because they want something to rip to pieces. And that scares me. That really scares me.
It really concerns me too. And one of the reasons it concerns me, I just want to circle back and build on something that you said there. You know, it's taking these tamariki out because they think that it's actually going to be more cost effective. But actually, yes. The facts are that when they take out these Māori babies and they have no regard for their whakapapa, which is very proven. I mean, the studies are everywhere. It's almost elementary yes. now. You know, the yes. connection with their whakapapa, their whānau, the sense of belonging, the inherent bond that is there just because they are blood. You know, it's family, for goodness sake. Everyone on the planet knows the family connection. And when they take them out and they do put them into Pākehā, Tauiwi, homes, there is no connection. And so these children actually, in truth, just be shifted from house to house to house. And I know, because I've just been doing research here in Te Arawa, researching people that have been in this system, trying Māori that have been trying to protect our tamariki for many years, one of them said to me, you know, she knows a boy that has been through 50 homes. 50 yes. homes. Now, how do you yes. teach someone that they don't matter? You put them through exactly. 50 people that show them they don't matter. Why do you exactly. think that they end up with, you know, a complete lack of lack of respect for authority and no connection or empathy to anybody because no one's shown it to them? And then when you ask about these, you know, you challenge and say, well, how these, you know, Māori children are being abused and our Māori parents, you know, they're coming through the system. Yes, they are coming through the system, and the system has been a damn terrible parent. And so yes. how do we expect these people, our whānau, to come out and be wonderful, nurturing, loving, connected, invested parents when the state is the one responsible for teaching them abuse?
Exactly. And this is why 7AA was so intrinsic in terms of moving the paradigm forward from abusive state care to community groups that were resourced by the state, right? This isn't about washing the state's hands or obligations, but actually putting the proper funding in and making sure those communities could provide those wraparound services. But you can see the razor gang mentality here in terms of the social welfare spend and the social investment programs they want to bring in. And it's all about privatization of those lists. So that if you're able to move someone onto a job or move someone off welfare or in the case of uplifting children, save costs downstream, the thinking is so short term. And as you said, the academic research clearly proves it's not a cheaper option in the long run anyway. But that's not the ideological goal of this group. It's about always cutting back.
And I think also, too, my opinion, and that's a beauty of talk back, isn't it? Well, you just can shoot from the hip. It's been about getting the voters because it was a topical issue.
Yes, and I think that you've had, you know, we just went through a universal shared experience with COVID. They are such rare events in human society, right? We all went through the same thing at the same time. But because it's an unequal society, the shared sacrifice that we all equally shared was distributed all over the place. For some people in the middle classes, being able to stay in really nice homes and work from home wasn't actually that much of a challenge, right? For those who were homeless, it was a hell of a challenge. For those who were in the lower socioeconomic areas, who were put under enormous amounts of stress financially, it blew up in domestic violence rates that went through the roof. And some of our, you know, we saw the kids of the social welfare state had been passed around and broken systems going into ram raids, and we saw a spike in gang violence, and we saw all of these pressures and turmoils that were caused by us going through lockdown, and they were all very predictable. Of course we all went through that because the stress of it was quite unique, and And it took some of our friends and our families down weird rabbit holes, the very same rabbit holes that Winston Peters is now playing to in some weird conspiracy swamp, where he keeps saying these weird things like, oh, the media's all been bribed with $55 million because there are weird conspiracies that Jacinda was bribing the media so that she could get everyone the vaccine because it's all part of some shadowy one-world government nonsense. I mean, this is who he's playing to now. And we had so many of our own friends in whānau who went down those rabbit holes, and we've lost connection with some of them. They believe in some demented off-the-wall stuff now that doesn't actually have any basis in reality. And so we went through this unique event. We've had all these challenges. We've been swamped with fear. We've been swamped with anger. This, you know, and you know, whenever New Zealand gets angry and fearful and economically scared, the first person on the punching line are beneficiaries of Māori. And we had an election where Māori were just a punching bag. And some ridiculous things, some absolutely hideously racist things were said and open that you thought you would never hear in this country. And I think that we all have to just, because we're getting so angry and frightened and scared, we've got to find a way to de-escalate and remind ourselves that there is more that bonds us together on these shaky isles than divides us. And that at 5 million, we're just a big family. We're not a country.
There's not much degrees of separation.
We're a big family, you know?
There's not much.
We've got to remember that. We've got to remember that common ground between each other, because things are going to get a lot tougher and a lot rougher.
I really do believe that. I do think that we are almost we're heading with greased wheels down a train track, and yeah, we actually do need to pull the handbrake on a little bit. And you know, I like to think that, you know, the media is, I want my media to be factual, and I want my media to be transparent. And I think that that was definitely something that suffered over COVID. And the fear, you know, fear was a weapon. It was weaponized. And, you know, I've got many mixed feelings and many friends on both sides of the fence, some of them sitting on it. And I think, you know, people just need some calm and something to trust. Which is, yes, you know, I think that's the most important thing, is who do you trust? Where's the truth? You know, so.
And I think with you're absolutely right. And I think stations like Wāhi are where the truth lives. I think that the journalistic integrity is there. I believe that journalistic integrity is in TVNZ, is in NZME, is in Stuff. Where I know that the truth dies is on social media. We forget that so much of what we see on our Facebook page, so much of what we see on Instagram, so much of what we see on Twitter, so much of what we see on TikTok is all algorithmically generated to keep you addicted. It's only going to show you stuff that will get an emotional kick out of you. And it keeps feeding you that, because all it cares about, all those algorithms care about, is tricking you to stay on for as long as possible. And they have hired very sophisticated psychologists, very sophisticated marketing people to always be presenting you with stuff to just keep you going. So we actually have to look at our own media addictions. We have to look at our own, where am I sourcing this from? Is it from something that's reputable, or am I just getting tricked? Because I think a lot of the time we're getting tricked. We're getting tricked into hating each other. We're getting tricked into wanting to war with each other. And all the while, those who are actually hurting the planet and actually causing it to melt have no scrutiny on them whatsoever. And I just think we've got to find that common ground between us, because there are big challenges that we've got to face, but we've got to face them together.
Hey, I'm so sorry to cut you off there. I really didn't mean to. You have to forgive me. It's never my intention to
never. Sorry about that.
I just wanted, you know, I'm listening to your quarter. I'm thinking, oh, yes, yes, yes. Let's go there. Let's go there. You know, TikTok and the algorithms. I saw something, ironically, on TikTok the other day, but it was brilliant. And you might have seen it. It was a lecturer. It was an actor, but it was great. So it was this lecturer up on a stage with the words, "That's so embarrassing," across the screen. And he was playing a chant, and it was basically, "That's so embarrassing, that's so embarrassing, that's," you know, and then he said, "I want you to listen to it a couple of times and look at the words on the screen." And I was listening and watching, and then he changed the words on the screen, and I swear that's what I heard. And then he changed the words again, and again, that's what I heard. And so what he was doing was just showing the power of what you see and what you hear and what your perception is. It's not always what the reality is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I know that's a deep dive, isn't it? But you know what? I do like these deep talks. I love the way the brain works, the psychology of humans, what motivates them to do different things. But also, you know, I've always had a thirst for truth. I think there's a kind of comfort and a safety in just knowing something as a fact. It's a bit like, you know, if you're in a relationship and you think someone's cheating on you, better to know than to live with the anguish.
Well, look, I mean, we absolutely do need facts, and we do need news, and it's also important to have opinion. It's also important to be able to hear people's arguments about why something is right, why something isn't right, give their views on it, and for us all to feel free to be able to debate. We're all citizens of New Zealand. We're a liberal progressive democracy. We've all got the right to be here. We've all got the right to participate in the democratic process. But I think that social media has become a weapon that has been able to distort reality for a lot of people and create problems between us that don't actually exist. And we're being divided amongst ourselves so often. And I think that the last election, it was very much an angry vote against Labour because there was a lot of that anger towards them post-COVID. I think Labour were very good at fighting the once-in-a-century pandemic, but they weren't good at the building back from it. And because we didn't get things built back fast enough, there was that economic anxiety, there was that pain. And it coincided with a whole bunch of global influences that were pushing inflation rates up. And I think that when people get scared economically, they thrash around and they're not voting with their kindness or their empathy or their better angels. They're voting with their angry angels. And we've got an angry angel government that's going to implement a whole bunch of policies. I think it's terribly counterproductive and won't actually go towards solving the issues that we've got in this country, which are our inequalities, which is the poverty. And the promise of democracy is you can look into the face of your child and know they're going to get a better deal of it than you did. But I feel that we're going backwards with this government. And certainly in terms of the major challenge of our time, climate change, I'm seeing nothing from them that shows any real focus on what we're about to start having climate-wise in this country. I mean, last month you had some of those global temperatures were 6 sigma outside standard deviation. I mean, the chance of them occurring is something like 0.0000047%. I mean, it's just so we are in trouble globally. And the thing that this government wants to ram through in the first 100 days is banning cell phones in schools and not agreeing to all the World Health Organization rules for some weird reason. So, you know, I just feel that we're not being serious about the things that we should be serious about.
You know, the climate change, that, so every night that I'm on this show, I always get both sides of the argument. And one thing that I do enjoy is that both sides are quite vocal, you know, and I try and offer a platform where people can come in and we can find some agreement that, you know, that's what's missing. We had a guest on earlier and we were talking about, you know, fighting, and that fighting has essentially been around since humans have, and that talking is actually the loss, you know, that's maybe the new thing. And being able to have a place where you can actually put your thoughts on the table without being attacked. Now, I know that we're around the same age group, and so you would have seen this shift. And this is where I think it happened, actually, out of America. I think that Mr. Jerry Springer had a profound effect on the human race. And I want to tell you why. Because the first time he was, you know, he was a pioneer of the kind of drama and talk back and mudslinging and, you know, enjoyment. It was almost like a modern Roman theatre with the gladiators, you know.
Yes.
People watching other people fight to the death or fight animals or just fight. And, you know, even now with boxing, people, there's actually still an appetite to watch people fight. And, you know, the blimmin' kids in the high schools filming with the fighting, you know, those things were going viral. And that concerns me, that people have an appetite for that. And, you know, I do worry that people have become such Karens. They've become such Karens, and they've become these real keyboard warriors with such poisonous, venomous opinions. And a lot of the blows now are below the belt. That's how you end a debate. If you're not winning it, you go below the belt. And, you know, I think there's too much of that now. There aren't enough safe spaces where people can just talk. And I can't say, you know, that our, I think the politicians are the worst. You know, they're always, I mean, you know, there's some language that's being used. It's, they're fighting words. What do you think about
I think if you, you know, if you go back to Roman times, you had many writers writing terrible things about each other. Throughout history, we've always been pretty mean towards each other. I think the internet allows us to be meaner, and I think the internet allows us to be meaner to more people. I think that we just have to be conscious of how easily tricked we are into believing everyone is as angry and radical as we are feeling at that time. I think that if we want to be good citizens, we need to be conscious of how easily manipulated we are by social media. And that's why, you know, mainstream media, legacy media, you know, TV, radio, newspapers, what have you, there's still an anchor toward and where the real is. And I think that we just have to, for me, it's like a diet. It's like you try to eat as well as you can. You try and eat as many vitamins and as many greens, and you try and eat as many vegetables and what have you. And you try and keep that diet for your health. I think you've got to have the same thing with media. You've got to be, consider social media fast food. You know, it's really, 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 really bad for you, fast food. And if that's all you're dining on, if that's all you're reading, if that's all you're getting your information from, it is going to warp your view, because you think you're seeing everything that's out there to see, and when really it's an algorithm that's secretly just feeding you stuff to keep you locked in for as long as possible. And they use very, very clever techniques to keep you on. Their focus is for you to stay on Facebook, stay on TikTok, stay on Twitter, stay on Instagram for as long as possible, and it just drains and takes from you. And so I think we just have to be aware. And of course, it's because it's still so new, social media platforms, we're only getting our heads around them now and their full implications. So no one should feel bad about, oh, I'm using too much social media. We haven't really had it around long enough to realize how bad it could be. You know, it's got its uses. It's an amazing place to connect with people, but it's also, it can deceive you into thinking things that aren't actually real.
I think it's a minefield. You know, I have to say, I really enjoyed my time at law school because I gave myself permission to completely step back with no regret. And no guilt from social media, because I've been all over Facebook, and I'm out picking up rubbish, and you know I'm going. But there was the pressure to then keep doing it because then, you know, I really felt the pressure that there were actually people that wanted me to lead and wanted me to keep going, wanted me to keep fighting. But also too, there were some who wanted me to fight more than I was willing. You know, wanted me to get dirtier than I was willing to get, just as a person.
Yes.
And And so, you know, I had this wonderful saying, you get further with sugar than you do with salt. And, you know, and it's true because, you know, I get asked many times to join in politics. I've had essentially every political party approach me at some point. And absolutely. I've chosen not to because I do appreciate the peacefulness of my somewhat neutrality, you know, like I have opinions, they change depending on new facts that I learn. But I tell you, the reason why I have stuck so closely to my environmental work, so papatua na kurangi nui, and nature, and that is because there is no politics and there is no religion. It's just, you know, just if you strip away, it is the one thing that connects us all, whoever we are, wherever we are in the world, is our connection to nature. And I heard this wonderful young advocate, Shutez Kot, talk once. He's the youth director of Earth Guardians. And he had a wonderful line at the UN. He said, we all drink the same water and we all breathe the same air. And so I find comfort in my advocacy for the environment. You know, every week I'll get on to Radio Wātea, and because it's talk back, you know, I have the opportunity to delve into wherever our, you know, our callers go or comments go. But I do actually enjoy the peace of not social media as much.
And it's important, I think, to step back and reflect on where your values are and what those things are worth fighting for. I certainly think the environment is one, and I think that being in a liberal progressive democracy like we are in New Zealand, I feel passionately that it doesn't matter what role you are in society, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're a garbageman, whether you're a nurse, whether you're a teacher, it doesn't matter the status you're in. If you weren't doing the job that you were doing, if no one was doing it, then society as a whole would fall over. You know, if we didn't collect our garbage after a month, people would start getting sick and dying. It doesn't matter the role that you are in society. You're fulfilling that role, and because you are, you deserve the fruits and harvests of that society. You deserve to have housing for everyone. You deserve to have roads that work. You deserve to have education facilities that look after them, health facilities that everyone deserves to benefit in that harvest of a progressive democracy. And I just think that as we move forward, we've got to remind ourselves of the egalitarian state, this country where we are equal amongst one another, regardless of status in life, and strive and work towards that. I don't think that government we have in will be doing that, but I think over the next 3 years we have to define ourselves about who we are as a people and why we deserve to be able to get back in power and make the changes we want to make.
You know what? I think I need to ask you to come back and do this again. Because
My pleasure.
You know, it's fantastic. I'm mindful of not keeping you on here for too long because I didn't tell you I'd hold you for an hour, but it's been...
Have we been on for that long? I'm sorry, once I start talking, I don't shut up.
No. It's brilliant. And, you know, I appreciate, first of all, lovely to have the kōrero with you. And I love the way that... we very freely dip into our own opinion and we're quite vocal on it. And long may that last. Long may that last. Indeed. What's, you know, just finally, what's the next week for you? What's happening for you?
We have the final working group podcast on Tuesday night. That will be the final one for the year. I've got David Seymour and Willie Jackson on that. So that will be a fun and adventurous show. I'm just looking forward to getting away for the summer, spending time with friends and family, enjoying this wonderful, wonderful weather as much as we can, and then spending the summer thinking about how we get the left re-elected and sitting down and talking to a lot of people in the Labor Party and the Greens and the Māori Party. That's what I'll be doing.
Oh, well, wonderful. All the very best with that. You know, I think there's some motivation there. Some motivation.
Indeed.
But,
indeed.
You know, I'm going to be out there with you, enjoying our beautiful country and being grateful for the things that we do have and the yes. life that we do have. You know, in terms of the world, I think we're pretty fortunate here, and we've got to be grateful for the good, you know, the peace that we do have, even though.
Oh, amen. 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 Absolutely.
There we go. Absolutely. We'll leave it at the amen. If I got an amen out of God. That's fantastic.
Be well. Have a wonderful evening. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you so much.